the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the CBP Friday lunchtime rip. I had a delicious baguette sandwich today. Oh, carnivores and shambles, I know. Nice baguette, some soft cheese that my wife bought. Don't know the name. Probably couldn't pronounce it even if I did. Lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise, chicken breast. I think that's the best sandwich meat. I'm kind of partial to the Italian sandwich meats too, but chicken breast is nice. Good crunch. Not quite a crunch, but a good bite. Doesn't pull the same way that salami or prosciutto does. But yeah, I hope you're having a good lunch. And thanks for coming. Thanks for stopping by. Today, we're talking to Brandon from BTC Trading Cards. I got to be honest. I don't know anything about Brandon. And I don't know anything about trading cards except Pokemon cards that I used to do when I was a kid or deal with those, when I was just a little guy. But I haven't dabbled in that in a while. I will say that in the summertime, Huddle D and I were out for beers. And we had to stop our activity for like 10 minutes in a parking lot because he had to buy some kind of BTC trading card release, I'm pretty sure. So I'm sure we'll talk about what they got going on over there with the releases and the rarity and the scarcity and the collectible stuff. Bitcoiners love this stuff. I don't know why. There's a lot of overlap, though. People seem to enjoy them quite a bit. So we're going to get into that with Brandon. But first, as always, friends, the ads. Commerce up front. EasyDNS, best place for you to host your content. Your friendly neighborhood registrar, as Mark always says. We're using them for CanadianBitcoiners.com for our email, for our website, for our posts, for our YouTube stuff. And we're going to move over to them more and more as Anchor and Spotify continue to fungule the process and fumble the bag from a lot of podcasters, I think, judging by the Twitter feedback they're getting. We're going to continue to move over to EasyDNS as much as we can to kind of become a self-hosted entity with them as much as possible. They have everything you need there. Virtual private server stuff. So if you want to run a BTC Pay server, Bitcoin node, Nostr Relay, Nodeless implementation, they got you covered, Mark and team. They'll do email for you, like I mentioned, PGP and GPG, which are two different things that do exist in the email world, both of which make it a little harder for the big man to crawl your data as it travels the fiber lines under the ocean or whatever it does. And of course, if you tell Mark we sent you, you use the code CBP Media. Is it CBP Media? I think it is. On EasyDNS.com, you get 50% off your first round of buys, which is great. Mark's been a great friend to the show. And we look forward to seeing what you guys do with that opportunity and with that discount. The second sponsor on a day like today, man, like I almost wanted to turn my block clock off. It was down because we had a power surge here yesterday, but I replugged it in this morning. I thought I can't just be up on the up days and down on the down days. I got to be up on both times. So price obviously down today, like 5%, 6%, 7% earlier or in the middle of the night for you night owls. Bullbitcoin.com, best place for you to take advantage of those dips. Go to the post office, bring your QR code, buy KYC free, very light KYC. You do need a phone number now when you register, but there are services available for that. If you are in need of one, I'm sure you can find them online. They use Lightning. Check the Telegram chats you're in. I'm sure a lot of you guys are in Bitcoin Telegram chats that are more competent and able to help with that than I am, but certainly I could probably do my best as well. And I know I've gotten some asks from you guys, so I'll think about how to do that. Don't forget too, if you need to pay your bills, you can do so in Bitcoin with their bills service, BYLLS. Everything from like your property tax, your fiat university bill, your cell phone bill, all the stuff that you should have gotten out of, because if you're not out of it, you're short Bitcoin, but you didn't because I don't know why, honestly. You can pay the bills there with Bull Bitcoin as well. Use the link in the promo code. I think the code is like mission.bullbitcoin.com/CBP or something like that. And when you sign up, you get $20 when you fund, which is great. I mean, you can't beat that. You're going to go with a phone number that may or may not belong to you. And they just throw you $20 on your first buy, which is great. You can't beat that at all. So two great sponsors. And now I'm going to bring in Brandon from Bitcoin Trading Cards. Brandon, okay, where are we going to start here? I don't know anything about you. Maybe we should like start with your history, your background. I know. Where do you want to start?
Hockey. Got to start with hockey.
Oh, are you muted? It looks like you're muted.
Oh, I'm muted?
Oh, now I can hear you a little bit. Okay, go ahead. Yeah, you're good.
Can you hear me? Good? Yeah. Hockey. Got to start hockey, man. Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. I mean, what better place to start with the hockey? So, boy, oh boy. Yeah, I know. Number one, I appreciate you having me on. I lead marketing and PR for Bitcoin Trading Cards. you know, we can get into that obviously. And, but hockey, my journey starts, I grew up in Michigan, spent a lot of my life in Canada. My wife's family, or she is half Canadian, has dual citizenship. And I spent a lot of time in Toronto and all the areas in Ontario, and then been out west, out east. We had under 17. I played for the U.S. national team. Under 17 tournament was in St. John's in Newfoundland. So played, I'm trying to think. I mean, like Carey Price, I played against Carey Price when he was in the under 18, Canadian under 18 team. And we beat you guys, unfortunately, in the gold medal game. That was under 18s in 2005. So it shows you our age. 37 this year. The 87 age group will be turning 37 you and me this both, year.
Buddy. Yeah, we're in the same day.
There you go. So yeah, just grew up playing hockey, travel hockey around here, and my whole life played for Little Caesars. And then we, you know, progressed to the U.S. team, the national team here. That was only a couple of years in, basically, when they started that here in the late 90s. And it just happened to be an hour down the road from me, ironically, in Ann Arbor, where the University of Michigan is. And so I played there for 2 years and then played at Michigan State University. And we won a national championship there. It was awesome times there. Played with a lot of great people in all those teams, as you can imagine. But I got hurt. I got really hurt, actually, my under 18 year. So my senior year of high school, and we were playing Michigan, actually, because the 18-year-olds would play colleges. So we were playing at Yost, and I got tripped going into the boards, and it was actually a really dirty play. And I got tripped by the captain of Michigan at that time, which I was a recruit going to Michigan State. So you can infer what you want there, and tripped me going into the boards. You know, one of the dirtiest plays you can make in hockey.
Yeah.
And so I like wishbone going into the boards and pulled like pubic muscle off both sides of my pubic bones. Oh, and right there, I knew, like, you know, I was going pretty much full speed back for a puck into our end. I was a defenseman and got tripped going in the boards, and pretty much game over at that point for my career. But I just, you know, it took me a handful of years to realize it after that. And so I got up and I saw the guy come around the net, and I just cross-checked him in the head or the neck or whatever, and just took him out. And so I got a penalty. We were up 5-3 on Michigan, actually. And then Phil Kessel got a penalty like 30 seconds later. Phil loves slashing guys. So Phil, Phil's out there. Phil. Yeah, he's killing penalties. I have no idea why. I don't know why. Ronnie Rolston was our coach. Great guy. No idea why Phil was killing penalties. But we're winning the game at this point, right? We're killing penalties. There's like 10 minutes left in the game, and we're up. There's no reason for Phil to be on the ice, and Phil's on the ice. Well, he slashes a guy in the O-zone, like forechecking them, and they're breaking out of the zone, and he's in the box with me. Well, you know, then they score. So Michigan scores on both of our power play or both of our penalties, ties the game, and they win in overtime. I get 5-minute overtime or whatever we played after. But I didn't play the rest of the game. Like I just knew, you just know, right? Something's wrong.
Exactly.
Like, you could skate still, it could do whatever, but you just knew something was wrong. And so then after that, I didn't play for like 2 months. That was February of 2005. Didn't play for 2 months. And then we went to World Under 18s, and they took me. You know, by the graces of God, they took me. They're like, hey, you're one of our leaders. You're a locker room guy. We need you here. They left four guys at home and took four other guys from OHL teams, you know, other teams, American guys were around the country. And so I came still, you know, which I was very grateful for. It says a lot about our coaching staff and just, you know, I guess me to a degree, I guess, but just leadership, right? I mean, there's a lot of leaders out there, but it was leadership and team, right? That's what wins at the end of the day. So it's a lesson for life for Bitcoiners, whatever it might be. But went, played Carey Price in the finals within the Czech Republic, and we won 5-2. Phil had like three goals or something like that, two or three goals. And Chris Letang was out there. I'm trying to think. There's so many good guys. Jack Johnson, Nathan Gerby on our team. Peter Mueller was a stud, underager on our team. His career was cut short, unfortunately, but he was an unbelievable player. And but yeah, we had Chris Letang. Trying to think of other guys in the Canadian team. No Crosby. Crosby is playing, you know, whatever. Crosby
was probably like three years pro by then, right? Something like that. 2 years pro, maybe. Yeah.
NHL, they drafted him at 15, and they're like, yeah, you're just coming here. So Crosby's nowhere to be seen, or else the game might have been a little different. So that would have made the game a little tougher. And so it was, so it was phenomenal times. And so then I went to Michigan State, but I went to World Juniors, the tryouts that year, but I couldn't skate, or couldn't do anything all summer. Like the Lake Placid where the tryouts were for the U.S. team. And it was like in August. And
who are you rehabbing with, Brandon? You rehabbing with the team? Are you rehabbing?
So privately? I was rehabbing with at Michigan State, actually, because I was already committed to Michigan State. And then I, you know, so after, like, when that ended, actually, as soon as I got hurt, almost immediately went out to Michigan State, because Michigan State has a really good like manual medicine program actually. And their athletic therapy and everything is really, it's unbelievable. It's the only reason I was really able to continue playing, because I pretty much went right to them and we started doing stuff. But then I couldn't do anything all summer, because it just was, you know, hurting and like different, you know, stuff, or taking x-rays, doing all the stuff. I go to the World Junior Camp on no skating, no working out, nothing for like 3 months. You know, that was like April, May when we won the under 18s. And then August was the camp, and I had a great camp, you know, just again, just like played out of my mind, just on adrenaline basically. And Walt Kyle was the Northern Michigan coach at the time. He was the coach of the World Junior team that year. And he was just like, hey, he's like, I'd love to take you. Like, I want you, but like, I can't take you. Like, yeah, like I know, like it's, you know, it's probably only gonna get worse from here. Like if I'm not doing much until 5 more months until the whatever, 4 more months, or trying to think. Yeah, 4 more months until the tournament. And so I ended up like missing the first couple of months of the year. I finally got on campus, really, truly on campus at State. And I, you know, there was like, yeah. So I sat out the first 2 months. My ego got in the way, and I should have redshirted, didn't. And just ego, 18-year-old kid ego. And I was
for
like,
people who don't know, redshirt is when you're a freshman, you can keep a year of eligibility and sit for a season, but be with the team anyway. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, smart, should have done that. But my thinking was like, well, it's my, you know, I already missed my draft year here. I didn't get drafted. And I went, long story, but I went from, you know, being a, you know, playing for the U.S. national team like a year or two before, or those 2 years, and then being one of the top rated kids in whatever North America to literally not getting drafted like 2 years later, like a year and a half later. And there's multiple reasons for that. One of them, obviously the big one, is being injured the last, you know, the whole season, all the important things, the draft, you know, Wonder 18s, World Junior Camp, like all these things. So my thinking was, well, shoot, if I don't, I'm already not playing at State. They already kind of sat me down there. And then if I, you know, don't, or sorry, I was like, I can't sit at Michigan State because there's no, what else do I do? Like this is my final draft year to really like, you know, whatever. End up not redshirting. I come back like halfway through the year and I'm not myself. Like I'm not playing up to any of my capabilities, and the coaches are just not pleased. And because they're like, we recruited a whole different guy. Yeah, and and, you know, initially, right? So it was just, it was rough. We won the national championship. We lost in like the early ends, you know, first or second round of the NCAA tournament that year. Really talented team. Should have like had David Booth, Corey Potter, Drew Miller, you know, Advocator. I'm trying to think. There's tons of guys, Tim Kennedy. I mean, so many guys that played in the NHL on that team, and really talented, but didn't win that year. We actually won my sophomore year with a less talented team, but more of a team. And, right. But I still was not totally myself. Couldn't. So that following year, to wrap this whole part of the story up, is I go under the knife after my freshman year is over in like May, because they're like, all right, we've done everything. Like it's been a year and a half. Like you got to go get opened up and see what's going on here. And sure enough, they're like, oh yeah, you pulled you know, muscle off both your sides of your pubic bone. Like, what do you know? And so I derailed like my whole summer, basically. Couldn't really skate. Couldn't, you know, do anything all summer, May to August. And then here back at school, just kind of, you know, somewhat limped through that year, sophomore year. And again, wasn't myself. So now this is, you know, two or three years into like, okay, just missing all the important things. Won the national championship that year. Finally, but feeling myself my junior, senior year. By that point, it was a little bit late-ish, and attitude probably wasn't what it needed to be necessarily at that point after going through all these things. And so a lot of learning lessons there. And then went and played in the minors for a few years, played single A, double A, triple A, kind of like all in successive years. And then started getting hurt, like my head and stuff, which I never done before. And I just was thinking back to, as a physical player, kind of a Scott Stevens type of player, and I was just like, wow, I heard a lot of guys growing up, you know, just like really like, once as an athlete, as you know, like what you start to like hesitate in a way, and you're thinking about stuff like that. It's just game over.
You can't play.
Yeah, you cannot play like that. And so I hung him up when I was like 24, whatever, like right around there. And it was in the AHL East Coast. Mm-hmm. I played like half the year each year or whatever in that last final year. But I was like, you know, I'm done. It was like, you know, okay, things are ascending now. I'm kind of like back to where I should kind of be now. But I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't, like, the way I need to play, blocking shots with my teeth, you know, get in fights, whatever. And the game was changing, right? So this is 2012, 2011. The game's really starting to change. Took a few years, obviously, after the rule changes in 05. took place and the game's really starting to change. And
it's wide open now, right? Different game.
Yeah, it's wide. Exactly. And so now, you know, it's one of those things where the game was starting to really change. And I was just like, yeah, there's just too many things coming together. And so then, but during all this, the crash of 08-09, this is where, you know, Bitcoin, you know, the money, all this stuff comes into play. I was very political growing up, very like founding fathers of America, the Constitution, things like that. I grew up hunting here in Michigan, conservationist. Yeah. So very just like, you know, to the earth in a way, and just like, you know, sovereign, just like, I don't need government in my life. My dad was always questioning everything, kind of taught me that, like, you know, when you're independent, resilient, you don't need government. You don't need any of these things. So to me, it was just inherent and always made no sense to me. They have people out there like clamoring for government, clamoring for BS from other people, just made no sense. And so, but I was very political. As you can imagine, I was very like Republican or conservative here in America, in American political terms. And then 08-09 really blew my doors open, because it was when, you know, bailouts happened. George Bush came in, like, well, we got to bail people out. And, you know, it's like, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. That's not what we're about. That's not what Republics and the Republic is about. And so he brought us up on the platform. And Obama came in and finished the job off and dropped the floor off from everybody. And Obamacare, yet on top of that, finished the bailouts. And that's when Obamacare, right after the bailouts, was when I was like, man, this is a game being played on us. Like, we got it. This is the uniparty, right? It's not red versus blue. It's the state versus you. And that just blew my doors open. So I stopped like the political stuff really, and just started focusing on myself. Like, how can I improve myself? How can I gain new skills? So this was all happening during the minors, basically, when I was in the minor leagues and seeing this happen, just studying news all the time, watching this happen from 09 to 2012. And then I was like, okay, the Obamacare stuff happened, and Occupy Wall Street, the Tea Party, two sides of the same coin. The media is telling us we hate each other, but we really are the same people in essence. Right. But no one knew it. You know, people are at that time just didn't believe the media was that corrupt. You know, I fortunately could see that. Most people didn't, even now, right? We're still kind of dealing with that. People are learning. And so 2012, Obama gets reelected, and I was just, my jaw was on the floor for 24 hours. I was like, dude, you guys didn't just see the last 3 years. And looking back though, I realized like Mitt Romney is a terrible candidate. And
one of the worst candidates that the Republicans
easily one of the worst candidates. And it's like, I guess just goes to show you, right? The people that are running, it attracts, you know, governments attract the worst people in the world in essence. And also, there's a game being played. Like, there's a game being played. You are being played. And that's where and Romney actually had the 20,000 person, you know, Red Rock in Colorado. He was filling stadiums before Trump was. Like, people forget that the fervor was that high because it was an anti, you know, Marxist vote. It wasn't against Obama. It wasn't against the Democrats, really. It was against this Marxist socialist philosophy. And that's what, you know, Obamacare, all these things, the bailouts, that's what people were like, what is going on? And so I was like, oh, this guy's going to win a landslide. He's a terrible candidate, but he's going to win a landslide. And then he didn't. And it was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, what? Something doesn't add up. Like, there was something very fishy. So that was like my final thing where I was like, okay, I'm off to like myself. Like, I'm working on me, my skills, I build a business. I got out of hockey. So this is when I got out of hockey, 2012. I'm like, I'm done. Like, I'm going to do my own thing. I got to prepare my family for what is coming. Cause I could see it, like being a history buff and like seeing the stuff for years since I was a kid and studying these things, talking to my dad about these things, going on hunting trips. We talk about these things. And then you'd see that you could see now this stuff just repeating. Like, we're going to keep making the same mistakes over and over again. So, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I could see, oh, game over. Like, America's done. We crossed the Rubicon into true socialism. And then John Roberts, this chief justice here, thought he was a legislator all of a sudden and went around like his actual responsibility to say, well, Obamacare is a tax. You know, like it's like, whoa, 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 that's not your job. You have to rule on things. You don't legislate and like change the law. So all those things to me in a couple year period were like, whoa, like I'm out. Like, this is, you guys are not playing the same game I grew up thinking we were playing. And to me, I still don't understand how most people don't see all those things. Again, so weird to me, but that led me on again, building businesses, getting into real estate, studying money, Creature from Jekyll Island, all in that time period, understanding money, gold, you know, whatever, gold and silver, all this stuff. Started investing in rentals, real estate, you know, helping people buy and sell real estate as a broker as well. Just like, hey, I need to be in this space. and didn't start learn really about Bitcoin. It's probably until 2014, 15, 16, started hearing about it a couple times. Can't totally pin it down, but people started asking me more and more because I was doing all kinds of social media and teaching people about the things I was learning for 5 years. And I was like, hey, this is real money. This is, you know, gold and silver. It's got to be backed by stuff and blah, blah, blah. And so people would ask me like, hey, like, well, can I invest with you? Like, wow, you like, you know, a ton. Like, and then people are like, well, what do you do? Like, do you, I'm like, well, I do real estate. And like, yeah, but you like talk about money all the time. Like I was confusing my clientele, my market, everything. It was just eventually it became something where I had to leave. And I finally kind of left like a few years ago, real estate, because I was confusing my market so much. So 2017, I see the run up in Bitcoin, obviously. And that's when I was like, okay, I really got to start paying attention to this. Started buying in 2018 once it came down. Just as an investor, I was like, oh, I'm going to buy low when it comes back down. Right. As Bitcoiners now, we know, looking back, I'm like, well, that's naive. I could have gone up forever in theory, and lucked out. It didn't. So I started buying in 2018. 2020 is when, again, like that another like linchpin moment where you're just like, wow, like we are truly going this direction. Like no one's going to stand up. No one's going to do anything. All right. Like looking around like, no. Okay. So that's when, and I had some shit coins at the time, things like that too, in 2018. Cause I was like, okay, I had fortunately a lot more Bitcoin, and then position size as an investor, I position size and had, you know, a couple hundred bucks in like 50 different coins. 2020 happens. And I got rid of all that, cause I could see the writing on the wall as I was like, oh crap, over the next year or two, 18 and 19, I'm like, I should just be in Bitcoin. Then you're like, okay, what are the tax implications, right? It's not always easy to necessarily get out. I was like,
there's that pesky,
I'm like
trying to time again.
It. Exactly. So I'm trying to time it. And then finally I'm like, all right, I'm just done. So whatever it was 3-4 years ago, I just converted all of it to Bitcoin. It made sense at one of those points. I can't remember when, where it was kind of like break even. A lot of them were. So I was like, okay, going to transfer it all now to Bitcoin. And that's where, again, like you see this, the writing is on the wall. You see where society is going and all these inflection points and this pattern that we just will not stop. It's a speeding train going off the cliff. No one sees the exit signs. And it's been very beneficial the last 10, 15 years for me, just being in assets that were, like I said, gold and silver or real estate. And then now Bitcoin the last 5-6 years, and just been very beneficial to have, you know, bearer assets, I guess, to say the very least, of things that we can control, you know, firearms, food, you know, things like that, things that are, hey, we actually need these things or whatever it might be. So that, and again, that led me up to finding Bitcoin Twitter in 2022. I wasn't even on Twitter. I was on it, but I'd never used it for like 10 years because we didn't need it in real estate. We used Instagram and Facebook and all this BS. So I found Bitcoin Twitter in 2022 and I was like, holy cow, like this is wild. Like I didn't even know this existed. These people were like out here, believe the same thing I do. And it was just like, wow, a complete different world. So I went to Pacific Bitcoin 2022, the end of that year. And it was my first event. And I think Larry Lepard was like the first like Bitcoiner, like follow me, like early to mid 2022. And I was like, oh dude, like this guy's awesome. And we're like, whatever. So that's when I met Aladdin, who started Bitcoin Trading Cards at Pacific Bitcoin, who's just giving out packs. And I actually didn't meet him until a month later, the next couple weeks later. The people I met at Pacific Bitcoin hooked me up with him. And they're like, hey, you guys are into education and kids education and like, you know, just stuff like that and kids books and all this stuff. So he was working on another project alongside Bitcoin Trading Cards, which was like a cartoon, kind of like Tuttle Twins, if you're familiar with that, like education for kids and, you know, all the stuff, which is what I had been thinking about again for 15 years of like, there needs to be like a Call of Duty with like the founding fathers of America. Like, how do we incept this into the kids' minds? Like, this is the kind of stuff 15 years ago I was like thinking about as a 23-year-old or whatever. And so all these notebooks I have of like sketches. And so I meet him and I'm like, dude, these cards are amazing. And a month, so he's giving them away though, because it's the first time they come out. He'd been working on them for a couple of years. And his co-founder helped him just like, you got to get these out. So he got them out as a Bitcoin. We met up in December of 2022 and a handful of us working another project. Well, all the rest of the cards, the boxes sold out like by the end of January. And he came to like the handful of us that were working on this other project and was like, hey, you know, we just sold out of all the cards. Like, what do you guys think about just kind of pausing this? And then the six of us just working on this, because we got to get out series two by Nashville or Miami in May. Or I think that's when we went. And so it was like, like that makes a ton of sense. Let's not start something new if this thing over here is working. So we all just like jumped on board for like a month straight, you know, writing descriptions in the cards, helping get that stuff to the printer because we needed the lead time, whatever. And kind of the rest is history in a way. Now we have like 12 people on the team helping, and we have dozens of volunteers and We have a Telegram group of like 500-600 people, a bunch of huge collaborations now. Just in like 14 months, we just partnered with Fanatics Live to do card breaking show.
Fanatics.
Yes. Yeah, okay, it's nuts. Like, no, yeah. Like, I don't think anyone truly knows, like, at our company, like, what is going on, to be totally honest. I mean, it's like literally partnered with Fanatics Live 14 months into the company starting. And then we have another huge collaboration that should get signed here soon that we'll be announcing. And there's actually a town hall late this evening. Actually, we're having a quarter one town hall. So we might touch on it there. Actually, I'm not in control exactly of that itinerary, but I'm not sure if it'll be announced yet or not. But yeah, a huge one for later this year. We just partnered with Alex Vander Svetsky for his Spirit of Satoshi, the AI he's building, and made mm-hmm. cards for that. We have Series 3 coming out in Nashville. We've got a bunch of conference packs coming out. So it's been, I think we just sent like three different sets of cards to the printer for like two that are coming in April. And then is it two or three? I'm trying to think. But Bitblock Boom, the Halving Edition cards, which are April. Oh, and then the Spirit of Satoshi cards from Svetsky. So those are all like just went to the printer and will be out in the next like, you know, month or two, basically. And then we're working on Nashville now to get those ready for. So it's been nuts, but like the growth and like the interest has been wild. And you go back to like, you know, collecting hockey cards or whatever it is, like when you're a kid, it just kind of brings you right back. And it's the cards are, you know, I've got a bunch of different packs here. Like these are the Genesis packs or like the educational versions, which are cheaper, but the collectible
I'll put them on for people oh, there you go, I'll put them on the screen here. I honestly, Brandon, like I think this is cool as fuck. Like I know I like cards. Crazy, like when I was a kid, it's like tickling that part of my brain. Like I remember the sort of excitement of opening a booster pack or like getting a new box or like getting something for your birthday from that like genre of collectible. And like I said, man, it seems to me that Bitcoiners love this sort of thing because it's scarcity. It's scarcity, in their silo. It's all the things that Bitcoin represents to them, plus a little bit of fun. Like, are you guys finding the same thing? Is that like the story you hear from people? Because Bitcoin, Brandon, Bitcoiners don't buy anything except stake and Bitcoin. And here you are telling me you're selling out of these things. So you must be doing something right.
Yes. Yeah. Scarcity obviously built into the cards because there's, you know, the Genesis packs that you see on the top left there, they are more of a unlimited nature, I guess we'll say. So but they're a lot cheaper than the collectible cards. So these are meant to be more like leaflets, pass them out everywhere. There's, you know, the box toppers. We're trying to get rid of these, to be totally honest. We're trying to get rid of these right now so we can keep funding the new stuff we have. So we have a couple hundred boxes of these left. I think we started with 1,000, but we need to get rid of these last couple hundred that we have. And that way we can keep funding because we're just self-funded right now. So we've talked to investors and things of that nature, but we're self-funded right now and just, you know, pouring everything back into, you know, there's literally like very, very little that have actually gone out to the team. There's been like contract basis, like with certain people that have helped do media or things like that, but mm-hmm. that's it. I mean, it's all self-funded. Everything's poured back into the cards right now. So it's, we're going through those different avenues of like, what are we going to keep doing here? So there's the Genesis is a more educational side, a lot cheaper, obviously, but there's not foil in there. The version two, though, that are coming out this year,
$69 and $50, not that big a difference, is it? I don't think it is.
Well, for the Genesis ones, like each pack is, you know, a couple dollars basically. Where a pack of the collectible, like Series 1 or Series 2, Orange Pill in a pack, those like the flagships, where there's only like 900 boxes, basically 21,000 packs total. Those are pricey. Those are, you know, 20, 30, 50, $60 a pack. And that whole box is, you know, the first series was $500 a box for a box of 24 packs with 10 cards in each one. That was the first series. The second series were $621 a box. The third series in Nashville, I would imagine they're probably gonna be double that. They're probably gonna be 1,000, maybe 1,200 a box, because there's only 900 boxes. Yeah, it's crazy. And it's scarcity, right? It's Bitcoin. It's a great learning lesson in teaching people scarcity, number one, because you can see like the price is the only thing that can move. Like we can't make more of them. We can't make more of the Orange Pill in a pack boxes. So only thing that moves is price. And that's what is so different about what like the, you know, like Pokemon or, you know, all these other card companies, Magic Gather, they print billions of cards. They'll do crazy things where it's just, you know, and there's, you know, you gotta be careful with what you're buying at times. Right. So it's a very cool project where it teaches people, obviously, just the cards themselves, you know, taxation is theft. The government can't stop Bitcoin. And it goes through and we talk about the, you know, beautiful art in the front. And then on the back, we'll explain in a paragraph or two what exactly that topic is or whatever it is, the Bretton Woods Agreement, you know, talking about the gold standard, you know, bull markets, bear markets, centralization, decentralization. So we go through all these. We have people in the packs. You know, Natalie Brunel is in there, Lynn Alden, Lisa Huff, I'm trying to think, Greg Foss, you know, Samson Mao, and the list goes on. We have a bunch more people coming out in Series 3, obviously, coming up here this year. So it just, it continues to build and grow in that regard. The scarcity is a huge aspect of it. And with the Genesis packs, we'll have foils in them coming up this year as well. Once we sell out of these the current Genesis packs we have, that we will have foils, you know, they won't be super rare, but they'll be, you know, one of 1,000 cards, one of, you know, 2,500 cards, stuff like that, where there's foils or people, because like you said, when you open them up, like people love seeing the foil, they love seeing the beautiful, yeah, shiny, you know, the foil. So that will be in all the packs going forward. And you can, though, you can get a box. So like the big thing, like I've bought a handful of boxes where if you buy a whole box, it is a couple $100, but you get a box topper on the top, which is a one of 99 card, or it could be a one of one card too. So it could be a card that's worth hundreds or thousands of dollars on top of the box. And then you get the whole 100 packs. So there's no foils in the packs, but you can give the packs out. Because the problem we had was that people were hoarding the first and second series. And the whole point of the company is to orange pill people, right? It's to educate people and orange pill people. But there's a lot of boxes and packs now in cold storage that people, they just sit there. So it's great. Like, it's a great problem to have in a way as a business, but we want to educate people. That's the number one mission. And the collectible, you know, scarcity part of it is a great selling tool that we have, that we don't have to conjure it up out of nowhere. Like a lot of businesses have to create scarcity. We don't have to, yeah. We have it built in. It's the only thing that boosts price, but we were trying to, how do we thread this needle to get more of these out to the masses, where this Genesis, these packs, we can use the Genesis packs as, hey, here's a box for a meetup, or here's a box for this podcast, or here's a, you know, whatever. And you're taking packs to the local library, or you're just giving away, or you're leaving them at the restaurant when you leave, and they're just sitting there, you're leaving cards everywhere. They're meant to be leaflets. And so people aren't scared to give packs away, because people were literally like, you're like prying them from people's hands just to give them away the flagship series. Because you're like, well, what if there was like a $5,000 card in here, you know, or a 10,
is that,
10
is that the case? That's kind of my next question was going to be like, the secondary market for these things. Is it as nuts Huge. As I hear?
Yeah, it's nuts. Nuts. So if you go to Scarcity is, you know, Bitcoiners, they have, you know, resale market. They resell a bunch of different things in there. And I don't think we're on, Sats Crap or something like that. That's another one.
You have, I see on Scarcity. There's a Bitcoin, there's a Sessions card.
Yes. Yeah. BTC Sessions. I'm trying to think about the people on there.
But it's not cheap. Like 200,000 sats. Like that's, you know, that's not cheap.
And then
150,000 sats, 200,000 sats. Yeah. There is a secondary market for these things. That's for damn sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's wild. Like I've seen cards. We sold, Aladdin sold a series one box at Unconfiscatable. So just a couple months ago for like $5,000 to $10,000. And it was originally $500. Like, you could have bought it a year before for $500. So an unopened box was, it went for $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, I don't know, somewhere in there. But we sold one in Miami like that too, just a couple months, 6 months after the series one came out. So, and again, series one a little bit more, but again, like the collectible cards, the 21 clubs that are in, there's five different 21 clubs in the series two boxes, and sort of 105 cards of those total, the 21 clubs, they're very, very rare. Those sell for thousands of dollars, like, you know, 2, 5, 7 million sats minimum. I've seen a couple go for 10 million, I think 15 to 20 million sats. Now that's come down in sats a little bit, obviously, over the last 6 months, because the fiat price has gone up, right? So so that's the only reason that the sat prices has come down. So anyway, it just goes to show you, like, there's a collectability in this part of it where it's just very different from what you, like you said, what Bitcoiners are used to. And we want to be the entertainment arm of Bitcoin. You know, we want to be bringing DJs to conferences, have mascots. We bring this huge Satoshi costume that a Hollywood wardrobe artist built, this Satoshi Nakamoto spacesuit that Aladdin created. And We have Mother Satoshi's in the card. So it's Bob Burnett's wife is Lola Burnett. She is Mother Satoshi. So she's like a bodybuilder. Yeah, it's wild. And so like she'll walk around with the garb on with the Satoshi. I've gotten the Satoshi, the costume before at Pacific Bitcoin. And it's like, it was hot. Like, holy cow. But it's unbelievable. It's like built. It's literally Hollywood level. Like, it's like a foam suit. And you'd think it'd be like 300 pounds, but it's like super light. It has a fan in it and stuff. Like, it's
the fans and the headpiece are very important for the mascots.
Oh, it's huge, man. Huge. So yeah, dude, it's a wild, wild ride the last 14 months. But like I said, we want to be the entertainment arm because Bitcoin needs the entertainment. You know, like we have all the altcoin shit coins, you know, NFT, they take a lot of the quote unquote fun because they're doing like ridiculous stuff. And, yeah. You know, Bitcoin needs that. It needs, you know, good, ridiculous stuff, I guess, right? It needs like, hey, we need to get the excitement here instead of just like telling everyone they're wrong. and we need to attract people here, not just because of bad things happening, Trudeau, you know, freezing all your bank accounts, and not just because price is skyrocketing. We need more reasons for people to come in here. We need some fun injected into this. So that's really, you know, our big goal.
So I pulled up scarcity here for people who are on video. And if you're on audio, I recommend checking out the video thing. While Brandon was talking, I was just kind of browsing. The question, I mean, I don't know whose idea it was to give Corey like the reverse dunk, you know, avatar, but like, did he demand that? Like, who decides what these guys are getting on the card?
So that's a really good question. Aladdin, I don't know in 100%. I'm 99%, I guess, on this. But Aladdin generally has an idea. He's the creative one. I lead marketing, for instance, obviously, of saying that PR, marketing, yeah. And everything. That's kind of my genius zone. We got really cool people on the team that have like really cool superpowers in different areas. But we have a handful of artists. There's a bunch. So like the new series we have coming out, we're working with like 21 different Bitcoin artists. Aladdin headmans that because that's his genius zone, which is the creativity. And like he has a thought behind what he kind of wants for every single person, and then he sketches that out basically, and then he sends it to an artist. This is too much.
The face, I didn't even notice the shattered backboard with the shit.
So yeah, it starts with Aladdin, like in his head, and he sketches out his ideas, and then he works with one or two of the artists, and like Asanoa now and Sam, one of our guys, and they kind of start getting it to like a phase two in a way, and then they get it out to whoever's going to do the actual art, another artist, or Asanoa has done a bunch of the cards himself. Aladdin's done some of the cards himself too, but like, again, obviously he's pulled in so many directions that he doesn't get to always do, bless you, his favorite thing, which is the art on all the cards. But it starts with him. You know, the genesis of everything starts with him and sketches and what he's kind of thinking, his idea. But he spends, like, we were just doing a podcast the other day, and I didn't even know this, actually, to the depth that he goes. The quality is so high level, and that's the thing. Like, I've never seen anything like it. He's great at taking care of community, and he's great at putting out quality things. So those are the two things I can say about him. Those are his genius zones. And our Telegram group, like, people love him. And he takes care of people like you can't believe, and just like, you know, rights wrongs, and we're all going to make mistakes. And he's just so good at like sensing the community and like what it needs. And for like the art, he'll spend like hours on each card, making sure that the artist, the person that has his sketch, knows exactly what he like intends, and like every little piece of it. Like he walks through it and is like, this is why I'm doing it this way. And this is why I put this thing here. So that way that, and, you know, it's hours up front, but like he even said, I mean, it saves time on the back end, obviously, because you're not doing all like a million iterations back and forth, because once that person gets it, they're like, yeah, I see where you're going with this. It really speeds up, you know, later on. It's kind of like do the work up front, and he really gets them to come together and okay, I got it. And then they go do their thing. And there's a lot less like work to do later, hopefully, generally. But yeah, it's a very cool process. It's a process that I don't get to see as much. That's the only like bummer for me and we're all over the country, all over the world, the people on the team. So I don't get to see that. He's in California, I'm in Michigan, but you're just seeing it come together from like afar and just hearing about it is wild. Just that art part, it's crazy.
How do you guys deal with requests for cards? Like, I would imagine there's a lot of people in Bitcoin who are like, yeah, hey, I need to be on one of these cards. And I'm not, and I want to talk to somebody about that. I mean, Bitcoin is a growing community. We talk about this all the time on our show, that like, as price goes up, you're going to get nothing but new people coming in. Some of them are going to be pretty big names. What do you do? Like, I mean, you guys can't produce everybody. So how do you decide who goes on, who doesn't?
It's a great, great question. So we have a huge Excel sheet. It's super, super technical in advance. We have a huge Excel sheet with all the people that have either like requested to be in or that we want to be in. So it's pretty, you know, fairly big at this point. And then Aladdin really just kind of goes through and has an idea of, you know, hey, the people, and they're like, well, you know, we'll say stuff like the team will say stuff like, hey, I really think we should have these people in or whatever. And we'll kind of powwow about it here and there, just depending on the conference or what it is. And because you try to make, and there's themes, you know, like the Heroes and Villains was series or, series two was Fuddbusters. So like mm-hmm. there's themes to each series each year. And so like this year it's heroes and villains or heroes versus villains. So you kind of have themes of like what it's going to be in a way. And then the conferences can take on a life of their own, the conference packs, which can be a little different. And one of the coolest ones, man, I'm really bummed. The printing just got messed up for Pacific Bitcoin this last year. So we didn't get it till afterward. We only got like the whale packs. The conference packs for Pacific Bitcoin were going to be really cool. And they had like Preston Pish had like an Apache helicopter like behind him, like flying. And he was like dunking like through the air because it was a basketball themed like pack. There's like seven swan people. Oh, it was like my favorite card that never came out. I was like, dang it. Like, so hopefully get to reuse that at some point. But so it is a process. There's themes to stuff, and then we, you know, Aladdin really has the ultimate say, obviously, and just kind of like, okay, this is kind of who we want or what I want in this. But everyone kind of will put input, not everyone, but like people who are like, hey, I think this or I think that, and then kind of talk about it quick. But it's nothing too crazy. But it's we get a lot of requests, tons of people. People trying to pay to be in the packs, like all kinds of stuff that we field. Yeah, it's wild, but we don't. Like as of right now, we don't, you know, no one pays to be in the pack and probably never will be. The ethos of the company, as hopefully someone can tell from so far, fairly red pilled. Like I'm fairly red pilled. I mean, definitely orange pilled, but fairly red pilled. I say that because I'm sure there's more people out there more extreme than I am, but I'm pretty far down that line. And in Aladdin is too. And some of the people that were in the company first and then his co-founder. So you have some of like the core group of people that some of the people that have come in recently as well, very red pilled. And so you're not going to find shit coins. You're never going to find any of that stuff. You're not going to find like selling of the soul. I mean, we've had a lot of NFT people come to us and be like, dude, guys could make tens of millions, all this stuff. And we're like, nope, don't even talk to me. Don't even want to hear it. That's not a Bitcoiner, you know, like that's not the Bitcoin way. That's not our ethos. It just never will be. You know, if we'll bootstrap it, we'll figure it out, you know, like we'll geyser it, we'll take on, you know, investment from other good Bitcoiners, whatever it is, to figure it out and how it needs to happen. But it's how do we get into the ultimate goal is to educate people how to get into normie world. You know, we're with Fanatics Live and some of the stuff we're doing this year and this other collaboration we have coming on later this year. It's really starting to take Bitcoin education into the masses, into the normie world that, you know, not a lot of companies can. A mining company can't do that, you know, like, you know, just doing normal everyday stuff in the Bitcoin world. You can't get to the normies necessarily. Again, price or your bank accounts being frozen, the positive or negative can do that, but that's it. So how do we do that otherwise without this collateral damage going on, I guess, on the side? So yeah, it's pretty wild, man, but it's a really cool company, and it's the people inside of it are incredible. The community is even better. The people that are in the community giving us a million ideas as well. These Excel sheets are
your Twitter mentions, like the Twitter mentions for the cards have to be just insane. Like, here's an idea, you guys, put this on the card.
It's crazy. It really is crazy. Yes. and it's wild. I mean, like, you have the cards, you know, we still need to market and do stuff. We didn't market at all last year. We didn't do any marketing. And that's why, like, I was talking to you, like, hey, we're making a big PR push. We didn't have roles. We were just all running around like chickens with their heads cut off, and everyone was volunteering with the time they had and stuff. So we were doing all this with volunteers. And now we're like, okay, this is a big thing, obviously, and can be 100 times bigger. So like, whoever can do this full time, whoever, like, let's go. Like, how are we going to do this? So that's been the last 2 months really putting this together. And so, like I said, I'm really have taken the big, the marketing and PR mantle and everyone kind of went into their superpower lanes, I guess, and started running with it. And okay, we need to get our shows going more in our podcast. And then we need to go on more podcasts. And a lot of our team doesn't like to be on stuff. So again, like I get thrust into that role because it's, you know, the marketing PR is, I like doing, I have good experience from real estate doing it for so long and running my own businesses. So like I'm not an expert in any of it, but I'm fairly good at it, fairly adept. And I like going out and talking and doing stuff. Again, hockey helped with a lot of that. Obviously, just being out front for so long and people interviewing you and doing stuff. And a lot of our team, as you know, and many people listening, the Bitcoiners, you know, they like to be private or they whatever. So a lot of our team was just like, yeah, don't talk to me. Like, I want to be in the back, not doing what you're doing. So we all have our own roles. And but it's been fun just kind of really getting stuff together in this first quarter this year and starting to get the word out because, you know, like the Genesis packs, like we said, we thought they'd sell more, quite honestly, just because everything else was bought up so quickly because of the scarcity. Really, we didn't have to market. It was just complete word of mouth, no marketing whatsoever. We kind of realized it was a blessing in disguise. We realized over the last 6 months, like, wow, like no one really knows about us still. There's, you know, very few people actually really know about us. It's, you know, we have hundreds and hundreds of people in our Telegram group and a couple hundred buyers in essence, you know, but that's it. You know, like no one knows about us because we didn't do much marketing. We just went to conferences and that was it. We put out some social media here and there. So like the conference crowd knows us or maybe half of them or a good chunk of them, but that's it. If you weren't walking through the bazaar at a conference, you probably don't know about Bitcoin trading cards. So that's where it's like, okay, if we have these designs, these plans, we have these huge collaborations, let's go. Like, let's take this next level. Let's get some serious things put together here. Protocols, SOPs, marketing, PR, you know, all these different things. Let's start putting this bad boy together so we can really create something cool here and suck the life out of the NFT, you know, crypto shill market. If we can suck a lot of these people into this world, that's kind of our hope and plan in a way, is we can suck that world into us in a way, then it's an orange pill lane right to Bitcoin. You know, like it's like, wow, these guys are given the truth. It's a collectability aspect. It's not some fake JPEG BS. It's actual like real cards, physical cards in your hands, not, you know, copy and paste bullshit on the computer. So that's where it's like, okay, now we need to start infiltrating that world. Fanatics Live is kind of that first step into that world of like, how can we get into that world? So if anyone sees this in the future, yeah, crypto conferences or crypto pods or altcoin daily or some BS like that, there's one reason only, and it's to orange pill the fuck out of people. That's it.
I like it. I mean, the other thing, okay, so I want to ask you, not to put you on the spot, but like Fanatics is obviously a huge company. They for people who don't know, like Fanatics does all the merchandise for, I think, every professional sports league at this point. I believe it's for sure the NFL or the NBA and the NHL. I think the NFL probably as well. They're not Nike anymore. I think they're Fanatics exclusively. And, you know, they make the jerseys with different manufacturers every year. They take a lot of shit for having a not so high quality product. And I'm sure you've heard this before. Michael Rubin has been on, you know, podcasts over and over again, talking about, you know, the nature of the product and why he thinks it's the best. But a lot of people disagree. Now, you guys have a good product here. Why shouldn't people be concerned about the Fanatics partnership? Because to me, I look at the website and I'm like, you know, I kind of want to buy a pack of cards, but if I saw Fanatics on this, I might not feel that way. So why did you guys choose to go with them? And you want to like maybe put people at ease who are not big fans of the corporate sponsor?
Yeah. And so it's funny, like in doing the research, this is a great question. In doing a lot of the research too, just over the last few months, like our whole team has been watching their breaks and some of the shows they do. And just to clarify, it's Fanatics Live. So it's the new, because there's different arms of the company.
Yeah.
So that's where there's a little bit of differentiation in a way where it's like, if you go to their site, there's a, you know, on the bar up top, Fanatics Live is one of the different subsets or whatever sub companies they have. And it's a content show. Well, a lot of it, you know, the card breaking industry is massive. The hobby, obviously the last handful of years with COVID and people just kind of sitting around, this stuff grew like wildfire, right? So
yeah,
they're getting the space. You have the Gary V's of the world, like getting into the you know, the NFT, the V friends, and he's one of their big people. Well, they saw us and I'm kind of going on a tangent here for a second, but they saw us and what we were doing. And they were just like, dude, this is unreal. Like, this is amazing. We want you to be right up there with Gary Vee. Like, we want you to be like a card show, a breaker show. So we have Coil Breaks, who's one of our, you know, one of our guys in our team, and he's going to be the host of the show. So we have,
what is a breaker show? Like a pack opening? Is that what I'm?
Correct. So okay. It's breaking the boxes, breaking the cards, opening them, doing giveaways, doing like contests on the show. And so a lot of the shows, they're like, it's like, it's just kind of like, there's not a lot going on here. And we've already done a lot of these breaks and stuff just in the last couple of conferences. And you know, Coyle's amazing at it. We have JD, who's Bacon Bits on Twitter, is amazing, a producer director. And then Julian Figueroa, who you might know, Kinetic Finance.
Oh, he's of course.
Yeah, he's helping with JD really produce and direct the show over the next couple months here to build this. So Coyle can be, you know, Coyle will be the guy in the seat doing it because he has 20 years of experience of card breaks and doing all this stuff. And so those guys will be helping in the background, helping him put together the show so we can really just kind of like blow the socks off of Fanatics Live and just kind of card breakers in general. Cause there's fun, but like, you know, a lot of the card breakers are just card breakers, you know, they're not entertainers, you know? No. So like that's where this divide comes in. And we see it as an opportunity, quite honestly, to answer your question now of it's not Fanatics. Cause yeah, like you said, there's been a lot of people with upheaval just with Fanatics Live partnering with different people and they're like, oh, they're going to kill the hobby and like all this stuff. Our sole goal is sell cards and educate people on Bitcoin. That is it. Like, you know, I probably put that in reverse order. It's to educate people on Bitcoin. And oh, by the way, these cards have to be super collectible too. And they red pill you and orange pill you. It's a Trojan horse, just like Bitcoin is. So that's the one and two mission of the company, basically make things and then the unofficial tagline is make things fun and easy to talk about that normally make you want to cry. Like Aladdin said that like a year ago when we were on the phone, I was like, dude, that's it. Like that's like the unofficial mission of the company in a way. It's like, how do you incept this stuff that no one wants to talk about ever? Like everyone wants to inherently inside them, but no one ever like wants to, right? You talk to a family member, they're like, okay, all right, let's shut up, you know, like whatever. And so these are the easy way to like, here, you know, here you go. Here's a pack of cards. Or, hey, what are these cards? Hey, check them out. People are looking at them. It's a non-threatening way to do it. That's the whole goal of Fanatics Live, is to get more attention to Bitcoin trading cards and suck people into this economy, this world of Bitcoin, this orange world. So that's the reason. It's how do we get into that world? How do we break into this world and to the normies, to the massive pre-coiners, we should say, probably a better word for normies, but pre-coiners that just don't know. They don't know about Bitcoin trade cards. They don't know about Bitcoin. They just don't get it. They're all looking for things to invest in and put their money into a store, you know, hedge their value and not lose. So where can we go? And so Fanatics became one of these things where like, hey, here's a huge vehicle. It's a huge thing that we could potentially use to get that transmission belt out into the pre-coiner world. So that hopefully that kind of, you know, assuages people's fears in a way, because it's solely this long-term mission of, like you said, yeah, the quality of these cards is unbelievable. And that's the feedback we've got. We worked with the Pokemon printer, the Magic the Gathering, that they do their printer. Like you can't work with them. We had a connection to them over the last year. That's how we were printing with them. And you can't use them otherwise. Like I don't think there's a website or nothing. Like you have to know them actually in order to work with them. They were blown away. And that's how like a lot of these, like even connections even happen with some of these things, because people are like, dude, these things are amazing. Like the quality, the art, the scarcity, and just everything. And people are like, this is unreal. Like, how'd you guys do this? Like, so that's what's really like Aladdin's genius again, like kind of putting a lot of these things together over the years. And he's had many different businesses over the years and just kind of putting all of it together over the last, you know, handful of years, like I said. And so people are seeing it and they're like, dang, this is unbelievable. But end of the day, the quality is in the art. And I tell this to Aladdin a lot too, just to be his like entrepreneurial, like a sounding board at times, and where he's an artist. So he's wants perfection. And so I always remind him like, hey, you got to put your entrepreneurial hat on at times, like just stick to quality with the art and what you are doing with the community, taking care of the community. And then your art, let me, you know, let some of the rest of us that are handling some of the other activities, let us be the quantity people, you know, let us be the marketers, let us be the people that maybe make more mistakes, that do some crazier stuff. You'd be perfect. You know, you go do that. And us, you know, we look at Fanatics, some of these things as these platforms to just get the message out. So that's why. And, you know, we think it'll be massive. If it's not for some reason, then we shift in the next 6-12 months and we go a different direction. But we hope that, again, it's that door into the normie pre-coiner world.
I think this is cool. Like, okay, so last question then, Brandon. For someone like me or people in the chat who are talking about, you know, they're thinking about buying packs here, Where is a good place to start? Like what, like when I go to the website, what should I be looking at first? What should I expect? And if you want, like, I would appreciate if you give us like, you know, what are the rarest kind of most sought after sets coming maybe the rest of the year, if you can. I mean, floor's all yours.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, brother. So going to the website, obviously it's btc-tc.com, or I believe you can go to btc-cards.com. Now, so that we've gone through like just rebranding stuff and putting stuff together. So both of those websites should take you to the same homepage now. And you can start with, again, the Genesis packs are the cheapest way to do it. They don't, there's not real collectability, scarcibility with it. So you can see them there unless you buy that box. So if you're on the video, you can see the box there that he's sharing. And that has the box topper, like I was saying. So it's got a one of one or one of 99 card that, you know, will go for hundreds of dollars and basically pay for your box in essence, and kind of like a self-liquidating offer in a way. Like, hey, you come give a couple $100 to buy it, but you're basically getting a card worth a couple $100 at the moment, at least. And it could go up in value, obviously, over the future as more people come into the space. So it's like, hey, you know, take the packs, do whatever you want with them, give them to your kids, hand them out, whatever. That's that educational world. If you're like, hey, I just want to kind of dip my toes in, see what this is about a little bit. The real quality, real, real high quality of like the foils and things of that nature are going to be found in the conference packs, in the collaborative packs, and the Orange Pill in a Pack, like the flagship series, which is the most rare. So we had season one at the end of 2022, and then season two was in May of last year. Season three will come out in Nashville. Now, the only problem is season one and season two are sold out, as you might imagine. The first one sold out in 2 months. The second one sold out in 3 weeks. And the season three will be coming out in the middle of the year. But, you know, again, those are going to be really expensive. You know, they'll be really expensive, which is fine because they're going to be worth a lot of money. But it just depends on what your appetite is, right? It's going to be, I shouldn't even say expensive. I mean, it's all relative, right? So it's, what are you looking to gain out of it? I guess if you're looking to dip your toes in, then Genesis packs are maybe the way to go and just start handing them out, and they're cheaper and you can see what's going on. And the other ones that will come out in a few months, you can get your hands on those. Definitely going to be worth a lot more. And when you're opening on them, or some people seal them and just keep them sealed, and again, they might be worth a lot more as time goes on. So it just depends on kind of what you're looking for. If you're more of like the, hey, I just want education, I'm looking for Tuttle Twin style stuff, or like just, you know, financial literacy, you know, whatever it is, Prager University type, you know, like that type of thing where it's like, I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to get my kids to learn. We're trying to have fun. If you're giving away as gifts, then yeah, your Genesis packs, your Genesis boxes are going to be your best way to go. If you are a collector or a hobbyist, something like that, that's where getting on scarcity, checking out the series one, series two on the secondary market, the conference, you know, collaboration, commemorative packs, all those are, there were, you know, those are the ways to look at those if you're really in that kind of collector space. And then series three coming out this year. And for what we have coming out this year is April is this Spirit Satoshi with Alexander Svetsky, his AI project. Those are coming out, and then we'll have BitBlock Boom, and then the Halving Edition cards, which are going to be incredible. If you go to series, go up in the top bar there, I think it should have, it'll show the different series. And I'm not sure if the new ones for this year are up there yet or what there will be. This might just be the past. Yeah. So these are all the past ones from the last year and a half. So that goes through, you can see exactly what's going on there. And then so for later this year, there's the Orange Pill in the Pack series three will be coming out, like I said, in Nashville. And then I believe we'll have Pacific Bitcoin conference packs as well later this year, and then probably an Unconfiscatable again later this year. So we have, oh, and then again another collaboration, probably another one or two collaborations with some big things we're going to be announcing here that again people will probably know about, these people that we're partnering with. And as far as Fanatics goes, again, we don't have any plans to make cards with them, to my knowledge, at this point yet. Even if we ever do, right now it's really just more of the, like we said, spreading the message. It's, they want card breakers, they want content on their channel, and we want to get the message of Bitcoin and Bitcoin trading cards out to the pre-coiner world. That's really the relationship right now, and that's the show we're building to be another platform of marketing and PR outside of what I do, which is going on pods and then having people on our podcast. So hopefully that kind of makes sense a lot. I know I've been kind of going through a ton of stuff here.
No, that's good. I mean, I don't mind drinking from the fire hose. Are you coming to the Canadian conference in the summertime?
Yes, I will be there.
I know people in the chat asking, are you going to be there? Okay, they're going to be there. Yep. So if you want to talk to Brandon and buy these cards, is there, where, like, when Canadian conference pack, what's going on with that? Did they not tell you to make a pack for this?
No, I know. So I've been the one kind of pushing the Canadian Conference again, because I know I'm the hockey guy. I live right by the border here. I'm right by Sarnia and Windsor, an hour from both the Ambassador Bridge and the Blue Water Bridge. So any of you familiar with those areas, obviously, but that's something that hopefully next year we're going to be doing. I know we're doing a hockey game this year. Corey from Hodler's Official. So we'll be doing a hockey game, which he's making some sweet jerseys for that. But that hopefully next year. That's my hope, is that we're going to do it next year. We're trying to figure out the conference stuff, just because, again, as you can imagine, there's not a lot of packs. We probably need to up the prices of them more, just because there's not a lot. It's obviously, it takes a lot, obviously, just to, like, you got to design it, get the art, get them back, and do all, you know, go send to the printer. Then there's errors. There's things that are wrong. Yeah, I mean, it's just I'm not going to say it's a nightmare, but at times it is a nightmare.
It's a process.
It's a huge process. And so just doing that and doing that every single time is very difficult. So you're trying to weigh your time and what the benefit and versus your time is. And that's where it's like, yeah, we wish we could do 12, 15 conference packs a year. And maybe we get to that at some point. We can do it somehow, but it's just not in the cards right now. And I think we have, like I said, I'm going to be going to the conference. Julian Figueroa will be there, who helps us right now a bit, and with some of our media. And then I think, I'm not even sure who else is going. It might just be us. And because a lot of the team is out west. So that's part of it too. So like me and one of the other guys are more out east here, but like everyone, that's why I'm kind of bummed that it's not in Toronto anymore. Just being like, it was 4 hours. Now it's 8-9 hours away or whatever. Yeah. It is. So, anyway, just selfishly, but yeah, that's some of the reason why. And it was just newer, the Bitcoin, like, given Bitcoin Atlantis, I honestly didn't even know Bitcoin Atlantis was going to be that big. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. That kind of blindsided me a little bit. And the Canadian Bitcoin Conference, I was bummed last year. I had one of my little ones was getting baptized, so I couldn't go last year in Toronto, but I'm super pumped about going this year. But I think as that grows too, like, we'll definitely have a contingent there next year for sure. So
I like it,
but I'll be there. We'll be there.
This has been great. Do you want to tell people, like, where they can find out more? I mean, you gave the website. Is there any other places you want to give a handoff to? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I appreciate having me on, brother. You know, we will be doing, like I said, if you email info@BTC, I got to find it. And I might have to text you what it is. I might have to find it. But it's either, I think it's BTC-cards. Yeah, it's info. I'll find it actually while we're doing it. But while I'm saying this. So if people go and to the bottom of the site and, you know, subscribe to the emails and check that out. And then, you know, just, you know, screenshot it and send us. And I know a lot of people that don't always follow the shows that I'm on either. So go follow the show here and subscribe to our emails and just screenshot them and just prove, like, hey, I'm following them. We're going to do like a giveaway or contest and get a, you know, big winner, maybe a big three prizes or something like that, to give away some packs or whatever it is, boxes. And then, so do those. We'll probably do those in the next, you know, I don't know, month or two. We got a lot of stuff we're going on. So give everyone a chance to kind of come in and see that and do that, and then get involved in the contest. And then, let me get that. Let me see what it is.
Gotta get that email. The email's very important. Yeah.
Very important part here.
We love giveaways, man. Like, it's something that the Bitcoin community has been great for. I mean, we get a lot of companies coming on and doing stuff to promote their product and giving people a chance to see, like, look, we're proud of what we've done. We think you're going to really like it, and we want to get you on board, whatever it takes.
Exactly. All right. I was correct, fortunately. It's info@btc-cards.com.
Okay.
info@btc-cards.com. So yeah, go, you know, like I said, subscribe to the email, you know, subscribe to this show, you know, just prove that you're in there so we can get entered in the drawing. I mean, obviously we're on Twitter. We're building up the Twitter account's been, you know, blowing up a lot lately. We're putting out more content there. And so, you know, go follow on Twitter, because, like I said, there's a town hall tonight. There's some giveaways there actually for BitBlock Boom packs that aren't even, you know, technically out yet, but, like, you're doing some drawings, some giveaways for some stuff there. And which I don't even know the link for that, but I'll send you the link here in a few minutes. I got to find that. And so people.
Yeah. Your Telegram is linked on the website, I believe, as well. So
correct.
I could throw that in the show notes too.
Yeah. So right by the email. So if you want to join the Telegram group, that's where a lot of, like, the trading goes on. So if you don't want to be on, you know, if you want to be on Scarcity or you don't want to be on eBay and, you know, stuff like that, the Scarcity is good because they're Bitcoiners, stuff like that. But eBay, if you know, that fiat world, you don't want to be involved in that. go, you know, you, there's a lot of trading that goes on peer to peer in that Telegram group. There's a trusted traders list. There's it's an incredible group of people. Like if people are morons in the group, they get booted like real quick. So like it's one of the craziest things I've ever seen, or last year witnessing like this group build and grow, and like the way they, everyone treats each other. Shouldn't be super surprising because we're Bitcoiners, I guess, but you know, you obviously right. get people in here and there that are scams, but people are like on high alert. If someone like seems like a scam or something doesn't smell right, you get like, you know, people in the group are like, hey, just heads up, like this person messaged me something, blah, 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 you know, whatever. So people are on like high alert, obviously, because you're dealing with people. You know, there are some intermediaries that we can use. There's some trusted people in there. Like I said, there's a big Excel sheet you can access with the trusted traders, you know, dozens and dozens of people that have completed successful trades with each other. And then there are some intermediaries where people use, if they're like, if you're selling a 21 club card and like an escrow. So there's a couple of people that will do like escrow. And that way you know, people are not doing directly with each other, and that you use right. each person. And then when that escrow gets it, obviously then they'll switch everything and flip it. So yeah, it's super cool community, and it's really the ethos of Bitcoin in a nutshell. So yeah, join the Telegram too.
I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys do, man. That was great. Thank you again, everyone, for coming to the stream, and enjoy the rest of your Friday. Have a beer at 4 o'clock, or don't, but definitely don't stress out, that's for sure.
Are you a fan of the old school NHL 94 game on the Genesis or SNES? Why not check out my show, the NHL 94 Podcast, from tournaments and tactics to the people who make up this community. Check it out wherever you listen to podcasts or find it on YouTube.